There are only 6 glasses of water here. I wish there were 7. To coincide with the 7-up I have been drinking. To begin with, I would wish you Jai Baba. Jai Baba, we have been greeting each other so often. In our letters we mention Jai Baba. We wish each other Jai Baba so much and so on and so often. And at least I had never thought about this as to what it actually means. Sometimes a word or two words or a sentence which is so often repeated becomes so familiar that we do not even bother to find out what it really means. So Jai means triumph, success. Baba is Baba. We know who Baba is. And yet really we do not know who he is. Jai means success. So do we wish success to Baba? Do we wish triumph to Baba? He is always triumphant. He is himself success. So what is the meaning of this Jai Baba when we call say Jai Baba? We don't wish that Baba be triumphant, but we wish that his work be triumphant, his work for the benefit of humanity, for which exclusively the avatar takes birth once between 700 and 1400 years. We pray. We cannot pray for him, we can pray for his work, because work pertains to the humanity, entire humanity, and it is carried out and done in illusion. That is all for Jai Baba. Now let us try to understand what this Avatar Meher Baba means. Avatar Meher Baba. Now let me say that Meher is his personal name. It was usually a Meherwan, but later when he was called as Meher Baba, that Meherwan was changed into Meher Baba. Baba is a term of respect. It is just a prefix. It doesn't mean anything. It means something like father, like a great man. Anybody is called Baba in India. When they say Baba, it can mean anything. It can mean teacher, master, a senior friend or father. So Meher is his personal name, Baba is a prefix of request, and Avatar is his spiritual authority, that is his spiritual status. Avatar, Meher, Baba, all put together becomes what we know as the avatar of the age. Now, we have also understood the meaning of the word avatar. Nowhere in no religion this avatar is really so much dealt with as in Hinduism. And even Hinduism in their book, Krishna's book, Avatar Krishna's book, Gita, it has not been so much elaborated and explained as Baba has done. I should say, Baba has rejuvenated the meaning of the word avatar. And even, now let us confine ourselves only to the concept of the avatar, let alone the experience of the avatar. It's a far cry for us. Far cry means we are destined for it at some time or the other to get into his bosom, eternal heart, But for the present, we shall now try to see what this concept exactly means. Some time ago I was asked, what does this avatar mean in reference to God? I said the word avatar is more comprehensive than even the word God. Of course, God is the substance of everything, and it is from God everything has emanated. But the position of the avatar is such that he is none else but the avatar. In relation to the illusion, God remains always disconnected. God is said to be connected. We really do not understand. But the same God, in the form or in the aspect of his being the avatar, is connected with the entire illusion. And God keeps himself absolutely aloof. Of course, it's a secret that Baba has revealed, because during his lifetime he used to say, all these people of the world who pray to God, where does that prayer go? It must go to God. Baba says, it comes to me, it comes to the avatar, it goes to the avatar, and he has to dispense with it. God keeps himself scrupulously alone, because he is the father and father of all. He has gone too old now, very ancient. We can say he has almost retired from illusion. And given his charge to the avatar. Before the avatar came, God was in charge. And after the avatar came, everything has been given in charge of the avatar. And avatar is none else. He is not any other at all. He is the same, but in his aspect as the avatar. So the avatar word includes God and creation, both put together. Whereas God is God. So I say, God as God is not man. That means to say, well, we shall get to the meaning a little later. God as God is not man. And the same God as man is not God. He is only the avatar, who is God and man at one and the same time, who brings down God to become man and raises up man to become God. In these few sentences, according to me, lie the spiritual status of the avatar and also his entire work. This is the game going on from time immemorial. It will go on till the endless time. Time, of course, doesn't exist in the real sense. It may exist as nothing. God as God is not man, means God as God is God conscious. He is not man conscious. Same God, when he comes as man, when he becomes man, he is only man conscious. He is not God conscious at all. Now we are all men. We are our body conscious, we are men conscious, we are world conscious, but we are not God conscious. So same God as man is not God conscious. This is a very unique position. And one has to understand, for all times, there is no time when this avatar could be excluded at all. And the rest of all the spiritually advanced men, they come and go. Until they reach perfection. And when they reach perfection, some of them, when they become the perfect masters and they give up the body, then they are completely disconnected with illusion. So there is no authority, there is no power at all times except the avatar, who balances absolute God with eternal illusion. It is said that illusion is also eternal. Illusion is the shadow of reality, but as long as reality is, illusion is. There is one difference: reality is not dependent upon illusion, but illusion is dependent upon reality. And besides, reality is absolute, and illusion is only eternal. So this is the only power that balances absolute God with eternal illusion. How much strength Let alone all the experiences, I shall keep aside love, I shall keep aside obedience, I shall only take intellect. Some say, we do not know how to love, Baba, we do not have any love. I cannot obey. I refuse to obey. I don't want to obey. Well, matters little. If you do not want to obey, you say you do not have love, I would not bother. Just try to understand what avatar is. At least, will you identify yourself with this concept or not, if you thoroughly understand? If you don't understand, discard it, throw it away. But if you really understand, then very honestly you have to identify yourself with it. And what is strength? All knowledge, all power and all bliss, these are the qualities of God. These are the qualities of the avatar. They are, when I say God, I mean really the avatar, unless I specifically say that he is not the avatar. All knowledge, all power and all bliss, even if we accept this concept, what a source of strength this is, we cannot imagine. Forget all our weaknesses, forget all our strength, forget all our love, forget all our obedience. Only hang on and stick on to this, but very tenaciously and for all times. And I'm sure the love and obedience, everything will come. Of course, eventually love is a gift from the master to the disciple, and obedience is a gift from the disciple to the master. It will come. First try to understand this. If somebody is serious, when someone says, comes and says, I do not have the love for Meher Baba, but why have you come here? I want to know something, I may be curious. Yes, then you take this and identify yourself with it. Identify yourself with the qualities and try to find out what it is. And you will be greatly, greatly helped in your life. The question of love and obedience may be a far cry for the moment, but they will automatically come to you. Now, second thing is obedience. I'm going to the thinnest point of intellect to just grasp the word, how comprehensive it is and how powerful it is. Then go a little further, keep aside the matter of love, only take obedience. But I can't obey, I don't want to obey, I don't want to love. Well, then I would say that love is the gift of the master. Unless he gives me the gift, I don't have it. Obedience also, I am not prepared to obey. I am unable to obey. I am too weak. I don't accept it. I am not able to obey at all. Well, but there is one thing in you. If you want to know something about Meher Baba, if you are really curious, then what happens? Then you have to find a way and means by which I will be thoroughly able to understand him. And then I am not prepared to obey. But you can take a decision in your life. When the decision is entirely taken by your free will, it doesn't need even love. To begin with, it doesn't need obedience. But I take a decision, I decide today to obey. Well, if I am really very firm, then who knows, Baba says that it is even greater than love. It would become a gift to the master, from the disciple. But it is not easy. It is difficult, but it's not impossible. And why I say go the other way round? Because the man says, I do not know love, I cannot have love. Baba always says you must have love. Unless you love me, you will not be able to understand my book, the most important book God speaks. So go the other way round. And if you decide for yourself today, and never to change your decision, I'm sure it will lead you to the same center. It will be a different way. You set aside that matter of love altogether, because you cannot align yourself with it, and just obey in the sense. Then the person asks, what shall I do? What shall I obey? You might have stayed with Meher Baba, who was in body at that time, and now he is not there. And who? What shall I do? Whom shall I obey? Honestly, I tell you, it may be to a certain extent right for the questioner to say this, but it does not stand my questioning. Christ was not there. Saint Francis loved Christ. How many years later? Today we have millions of followers of Christ. They love Christ. Did they feel the necessity of the Christ? Or they want the Christ in the body to appear before them? But just because Baba happened to be here 7 or 8 years before, and there are many persons who had seen him, they say now that he has given up the body, he has gone away, and to whom shall we obey? There are very few things to be obeyed. Books may be so many pages, God speaks 300 pages, and the discourses 500 pages, whatever it is. There are fundamental things you have to find out, the extract of what shall I do? How shall I lead my life by which Baba will be pleased? This is a simple question to be asked. And we can get from the discourses. We can get from the persons who have a long experience with Baba. We can get the answer within our heart. Baba has said the same thing all religions practically say. With a little light, a clarity, which you have to understand. Just a few things. Our ego is the greatest hindrance to us. But what are the different ramifications of this ego, which you have to tackle? It is our craving, it is our lust, lust for money, lust for woman, everything that we do, selfish. These are the few things you have to see in our life, and just keep him pleased. And I don't think anybody will find difficulty. If he finds difficult, then matters little. He should be sincere to the core of his heart. If he is sincere and if he tries his best, then Baba always helps. One man wrote me a letter that I do not know Baba. Whatever I have decided to do a certain thing under the certain circumstances, at a certain time, under the certain circumstances, I decided to behave in such a manner. But when actually I am confronted with the circumstances, I'm not able to do it at all, and I feel very much frustrated. And in spite of my trying best means that man must have spent lot of his time and lot of his attention to just follow his own decision and to obey Baba. But he was absolutely unsuccessful. And then in the end, I went and read that letter to Baba, and Baba said, "Tell that fool, this is my will." But we can't make that as an excuse and go on behaving in an irresponsible manner in life. That is why sometimes I hesitate to say this. Try your best means there is no limit to your trying, and until you are most honestly satisfied that you have tried your best. Not for the matter of finding an excuse, that I shall put excuse before Baba and say that I have tried my best and go in my own way to fulfill my own desires, as against the wishes of Baba. Once, what happened? Of course, there are many repetitions may arise in my talk, because I know that there may be repetitions to me, there may be repetitions to certain persons who have heard me before and are present here today. But those who have not heard, they may not be repetitions. So I have to probably repeat. It's a very nice story. The story is like this, that in the Mohammedan religion, there is a day of judgment. And the day of judgment comes when God invites the entire humanity and sits on the golden throne like this and dispenses justice. So what is the justice? Those who have committed virtues, they are selected and sent to heaven. And those who have committed vices, those who have committed sins, they are selected and sent to hell. And big, huge conference was there, you see. Millions of souls standing and God sitting on the throne, and this whole procedure was going on. One man stands up with his hand up and says, "God, oh God, halt!" "What? God says, who the hell this man is, I do not know. How can he come and challenge my authority? This fellow, where has he come from? I want to ask you something." "Ask me something at such a time, such a critical time?" "Yes, sir, I have to ask you. I would request you with my folded hands not to proceed further. You can give your judgment just a little later after answering my question. Shall I put that question to you? God was in a fix. Well, all right. You come forward. The man goes forward. What is your question? Sir, I want to ask you one thing. What? Please tell me whether your sense of justice exceeds your generosity, or your generosity exceeds your sense of justice. Oh, God was absolutely confused. He didn't know. If I say that I do not have enough generosity, I am generosity personified. If I say justice, if the scale goes that way, if I say generosity, I do not know what to answer. Eventually he said, no, my generosity is greater than my sense of justice. If that is so, the man says, I am the most sinful man in the world. Then God says, you are pardoned. Among the multitudes of crowd there present, they just held a small meeting between themselves. He says, oh, this man has gained all 100% pardon. Why should we not try? Let us stand up and ask questions get a release from this, because we would be saved from going to heaven because we have committed many, many sins. Almost all agreed. A number of them agreed. Then a wise man came forward and said, you fools, you will not succeed. So why? Do you have that conviction in you? What conviction? That God is identified with generosity so much? Think 10 times before you ever venture it. Otherwise you will have to go you will be condemned to heaven for twice the length of time that you would have been before if you try this without having the conviction about him. Then they thought over, yes. We do not have the conviction. Now what I want to say is, this man was pardoned just because he had that conviction. Such a great, unassailable, unchallengeable conviction. He was prepared he did not know whether God would really respond. It was such a great risk that he took. Look at the strength of his conviction, that at such a moment he came forward and asked God, if somebody has got it, he can try. Otherwise, all of us should submit and obey and not prepare ourselves to go to hell. Of course, hell and heaven, according to Baba, does not exist in the sense they are represented in different religions. They are only the mental states of mind. But who knows, hell and heaven represented in the different religions, and the mental states, mental sins are more poignant and maybe a greater suffering, we do not know. As somebody says, Meher Baba says, no sex? I don't know. God has created all this. I must go and have the pleasures of life. I don't recognize any sin. Sin doesn't exist for me. Why should I? He may call it sin, I do not call it sin. Well, then I tell him, Bible calls it sin, but Meher Baba doesn't call it sin. He calls it an error. It's not acceptable to me. But Meher Baba says error may be more serious than a sin. No, I don't want. It may be error, it may not be error. I do not want to accept this at all. And I will just lead my life in the way I please. How to explain this man the importance of Baba's instructions? And he wanted to really obey. But there is something came in his way which he could not. Then I asked him a question, do you want binding or do you want freedom? Oh, no, I don't want binding. Sin was a different thing and error was something else, and binding is more. He says, I do not want binding, I want freedom. Then I said, if you want freedom, Meher Baba says, do not do this. Oh, I shall consider this now. I shall consider. That is how it is placed and put, and it becomes acceptable to Now going back again to the state of avatarhood. Now let me just place before you that Muslims and Muslim religion, they are very orthodox, they are very fanatical about their religion. But one Muslim who came and attended in the 50s, conventions that were held at Mehrabad, he was so impressed that he went and wrote two books. He was a man from Pakistan, his name was Sahib Asmi. Sahib Asmi is his pen name. He wrote such two beautiful books in Urdu, Urdu and Persian mixed. One, Sarod-e Javedan, that is the eternal song. Another is Sahib-e Zaman, means the avatar. Urdu term for Sahib-e Zaman is avatar. They don't accept avatar. Just as Christian may not accept avatar, they may accept God-man perhaps, but not the avatar. It's a, the meaning is the same, the words are different. Now in his book, he has given some description of, he has written some ghazals in which he has given certain descriptions about Meher Baba. So I will recite a few couplets. Couplets composed of two lines. That ghazal, you see, contains 17 couplets, but just as few which I remember, I will just recite and translate in English. As to what height the thoughts of this man could really soar, and he must have had some experience when he came and attended the two congregations, not conventions, at Mehrabad, that he went and wrote these ghazals. One ghazal he says, Meher Baba, Kutub-e Alam, Mazhar-e Noor-e Khuda, Mard-e Haq, Insan-e Kamil, Tajdar-e Dosara. These two lines, of course, I mostly recite at the beginning of my talk every time. This time, of course, I didn't do because I wanted to recite the part of a ghazal. Meher Baba, Kutub-e Alam, you are the hub or the center of the whole universe. You are the manifestation of the light of God. You are the man of God. You are the perfect man. And you are the king. You are the crown king or the emperor of the two worlds. Now, when in Persian or in Urdu the two worlds are referred, one world is outward world. We know this physical world. Another is the inward world. The inward world, as Baba has described, is composed of the subtle and the mental both. All put together is called the inner world and this outer world. So when in Persian literature or in Urdu these two worlds are mentioned, they mean the inner world which composes of subtle and mental, and outward world is the physical world we know. The emperor of the two worlds. Mehrumai pur noor tere jalwaye rukhsar se, do jahan roshan hai tere partave anwar se. Mehrumai, moon and the sun. Where do they get their light from? It is because of you. If you were not there, they would not have been able to shine at all. Mehrumai pur noor tere jalwaye rukhsa, do jahan roshan hai tere partave anwar se. The light which you see in the two worlds, the inner light also. Inner light is far more powerful, the subtle and the mental we do not know, but we have read something about it in Baba's discourses and God speaks. So all this light, it is because of you. If you are not there, there would be no light there at all. Meher Baba, you see, you cannot imagine a Muslim ever saying this, which I will really recite to you in the next couplet, that he is likely to be cut into pieces by Mohammedans. They are so fanatical about it. And this man says, he writes it. And he publishes it. He could not publish it in Pakistan, so I got all the printed forms in India, and I published those books in India. He said, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, tu Khuda, Meher Baba, you are God. If he were to utter an assembly of Muslims, I think he would immediately be slaughtered right there. Meher Baba, tu Khuda, tujhme hai jalwa gar Khuda. You are God, and in you God is manifested. Meher Baba, tu Khuda, jalwa gar, tujhme hai jalwa gar Khuda. Meher Baba, surat-e insan ho to haknuma. Although you may have a face of a man, that means it means the form of a man, not the face. That's the way of expression. You have the form of a man, but you are the gateway to God. You are God manifested. You can guide us to God. Tu hai Swami Ram Tirat, tu hai Nanak, tu Kabir. Swami Ram Tirat was a great saint of northern India. He hailed from a place called Lucknow. he had written quite a number of books, and the title of those series of books was called In Woods of God Realization. Whenever his name was mentioned, Naba used to be very pleased about this. He says, Tu hai Swami Ram Tir, Tu hai Nanak, Tu Kabir. Nanak is the guru of the Sikhs. Kabir, you know, the perfect master of the central Maharashtra. And you are all that. You are Nanak, you are Kabir, you are Ram Tirth. Tu hai Nanak, Tu Kabir. Pursio Mehvo Kalam Tere Mohabbat Ke Asir. He says the God, when he sits and writes the destiny of entire humanity with a tablet and a pen in his hand, that was never possible if you were not there. He says if the avatar was not there, if his love was not there, this would have been never possible for God to do, he says. And further on, still more powerfully, he says, Tu Muhammad, Tu Masiha, Tu Suleiman, Tu Kaleem. He says, you are Muhammad Paigambar. If he utters before Muhammad is finished, he would immediately be made disembodied. Tu Muhammad, Tu Masiha, Tu Suleiman, Tu Kaleem. You are Muhammad, you are Christ the Savior, you are Solomon, and you are Moses, all in one. Tu Muhammad, Tu Masiha, Tu Suleiman, Tu Kaleem. He goes on saying on and on like this. And further on he says, Tu Shahanshah Do Alam, Badshah Kainat. You are the king of the two worlds, and you are the emperor of the entire creation. Tere nizdara hone se mujmar hai nijat. He says to come within the orbit of your love is to get salvation, is to be completely freed from illusion. I don't remember so many stanzas are there, but they are so beautiful. What I want to stress here is that the concept of avatarhood has slowly and gradually penetrated into the Muslim's mind. It is very difficult, it may take long, I do not know. But they believe in the Prophet, as the Christians also do not believe in the avatar. Now in this, would you like to ask anything in whatever I said, which may have been understood or not understood? Yes?
How did you get conviction about Prabhupada?
This is the question you are asking in my response to my... the conviction about the avatar. Yes. Now there are persons who get the conviction just as a man falls in love at the first sight. There are persons who take long to fall in love. It all differs with different persons. At least so far I am concerned. There was no problem with me for loving Baba right from the beginning. But so far as avatar was concerned, I was not convinced and I did not bother to be convinced at all. But there were three distinct different events in my life which put together gave me an unassailable conviction that Baba is nothing but the avatar of the age. And the first one was, old Gustaji was there with Baba. He was one of the oldest disciples of Sai Baba once, Upasni Maharaj later, and later Meher Baba. He was the only man who was a disciple under the three masters, and under Meher Baba he observed silence over 30 years. So once he told me in 1922 in Manzil-e Mim, he said, do you know that Meher Baba, when he was blessed by Baba Jan, and later on he went to first take darshan of Sai Baba, and he prostrated himself before Sai Baba, and when he got up, Sai Baba said, Parvadigar, that means you are God. Gustaji, quite a few times he may have told me. I did not give much importance to it. I just took a mental note that it was there, and maybe he may have said, Parvardhagar, so what next? That's all. Now, when Upasani Maharaj, of course, we used to go, my mother used to go, previous to Meher Baba came into our life, and whenever Upasani Maharaj came from Sakori, 50 miles away from Ahmadnagar, he always entered into a small prayer room which was kept as Upasani Maharaj prayer room for a time, and later on Upasani Maharaj said that you must turn this room into a Meher Baba room. So when he was Upasani Maharaj's room, once in the 30s now, first incident took place in 20s, then I am talking about the 30s. I was staying at Mehrabad, and sometimes in the evening I used to go home to my house. And one day when I went there, Upasani Maharaj just came along in a car from Sakori. And the first thing when he arrived in Ahmadnagar, he used to just come to our house, go inside that room and sit there for 5-10 minutes or maybe 1 hour or 3-4 hours, and then go out, then stay at some other disciple's place in Ahmadnagar where people used to come and take his darshan. Now on this specific afternoon he came along and I was there. My mother Gulmai was there. When he stepped down from the car, he just went naturally into that room, and I followed and Gulmai followed. Gulmai stood there, I stood here, and Upasani Maharaj asked Gulmai, give me a small tray and a lamp. Tray and a lamp is only called for when an aarti is to be offered. An aarti is always offered, it's a song of praise, it's always offered by the disciple to God or by the disciple to his master. We could not never conceive of Upasani Maharaj offering aarti to anybody, he himself being the master. Anyway, according to his bidding, Gulmai brought that tray and that lamp inside and handed over to him. Meher Baba's picture was placed right in front of him on a settee. He stood there and he started reciting the aarti for a time. And I was wonderstruck. I do not know what was happening. And at the end of this aarti, I do not remember, it was his own some aarti, Marathi aarti. And then he turned his face and asked me a question. Adi, do you know? I said, what, sir? Do you know who Meher Baba is? I said, sir, you must know Meher Baba because you are his master much more than I do. I know Meher Baba, but I couldn't know Meher Baba more than you know. Do you know he is the avatar of the age? Oh. Gustaji said, Sai Baba said, Parvardhagar. And here Upasji said, avatar. And yet I was convinced, say about 60% I was convinced, not only. Later on, I don't specifically remember, it was at, some say it was at Hamirpur, some say it was at Dehradun, some say here or there. I don't know. I definitely know that Baba declared himself as the avatar. And then when I heard this, I put all these three things together and my conviction became ever established that Meher Baba is nothing but the avatar of the age. And I went on publicizing Baba to be always addressed as the avatar and not Sri Sadguru or Sadguru Meher Baba, nothing of that sort. To impress upon the minds, I used to get letters with the same old address, Sri Meher Baba or Sri Meher Baba or Meher Baba, or Sri Sadguru Meher Baba, I used to return those letters and ask them to address avatar Meher Baba, and then I would only receive the letters, open and respond.